Hello and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by co-host Brendan Kleen. You can follow me on Twitter at EastSider. You can follow Burn on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. Also, for our Locked On Suns Twitter page, if you haven't already, at Locked On PHX Suns. Your Twitter over there is very much appreciated, as always, Brendan. We are joining you after this game for the Houston Rockets against the Phoenix Suns. The Rockets won 108-102, but Brendan, that was a very good game. And it came down really to the very end there. And the Suns never troubled double digits in this game. I think the most they trailed by was 6 or 8 points. Awfully impressive, especially without Tyler Johnson out there.
Yeah, why do you think the Rockets and Suns, I mean, I guess it's more to the Suns' credit. Why do you think the Suns have played the Rockets so well and so hard this year? It's just surprising me because it feels like these games have genuinely been close. It hasn't just been, you know, the Rockets aren't playing hard. This felt like a real basketball game, and the Rockets just came out on top, but it's been that way for two games now. The Suns just really playing hard against this team.
Yeah, it just feels like a really good schematical matchup, to be honest. I mean, you have Booker playing the Harden role. You also have the shooters around him with a Troy Daniels. I liked how you were starting tonight. We'll get into that probably in a little bit, but you have point Booker starting the game. You also have Ayton against Capella. They kind of play the same role right now. Also, the switchable wings with Oubre and Bridges, I feel like they match up pretty well against this team, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true. And I think a lot of it was Ayton, and then maybe we should just dive right in here. That would be, I think, probably both of us would have him as a free throw, a positive from tonight's game, probably the biggest positive from tonight's game, especially when you compare it with what he did on Wednesday against the Jazz at home, really taken advantage of by Rudy Gobert, as we hit on pretty extensively in that episode, but came out today playing pretty much the opposite of how he played on Wednesday. I think that was why he had so much success. We saw that aggressive version of Ayton. They got him the ball in the post. That was another thing Igor made a real note of, was the need to get him the ball more in better situations. That Wednesday was partially on the coaching staff, and I think we saw both Ayton and the coaching staff really adjust, be more aggressive, and integrate Ayton way more into the flow of the offense. So we saw him get going early and really impact the game.
Yeah, Ayton had a great game, especially early on, but this is not a critique of Ayton. I was just curious of why this was happening. Surprising success that James Harden had guarding him. That kind of threw me off a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what Ben talked about in our episode yesterday, which people should check out, talking about Harden's growth on defense and those quick twitch instincts that Ben was talking about. I think we saw that in a big way tonight. He's just a ball hawk on defense, and he's able to do that because all of his defense comes in one-on-one situations. So if he just has a guy in front of him and he's able to poke at the ball, it usually works. 6 steals, 3 blocks for him tonight. Just a weird stat line, but I think against a young big man like Ayton, it's not necessarily surprising. 7 turnovers for Ayton, but agreed. I think he had a good game. That was just kind of a weird thing. And obviously, maybe if he doesn't uncharacteristically turn the ball over like that, this game might look different.
Okay, Harden's. I just want to go talk quickly about James Harden just to nail off his box score, because this is one of the craziest stat lines I've seen this season. 41-9-11-6-3. Like, that's just absurd. And it kind of just goes to show how insane of a scorer James Harden is. But I think for just DeAndre Ayton's point of view, Brennan, after the game where he said he was an F-minus, the worst game he's ever played, it was really actually awesome to see him come out and play as good as he did early on and maintain that throughout most of the game.
It was, and 6 offensive rebounds. I think the rebounding is a good indicator for him, especially on the offensive glass, for what version of Ayton we see. I mean, I think free throw attempts is another good one. Just those hustle stats, those indicators of affecting the game with energy, getting to the line, getting offensive rebounds. He didn't quite get the free throw attempts that you would hope, but I think it was definitely an invigorated. And I think, you know, Capella is a decent matchup for him. He has the mobility with the ball in his hands that Capella isn't used to dealing with. So I think we saw that for sure tonight as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. And DeAndre, and like I said, nice to see him respond to that. But I'm going to move on to my first free throw, Brian. And for me, it's Devin Booker. He had a great game tonight, 29 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists, 9 of 22 from the field. he was playing like a James Harden type player tonight, and also 10 of 11 at the free throw line. PJ Tucker got frustrated a couple times, I think, because he's kind of realizing that Devin Booker is becoming really good at drawing free throws now, which is really one of the more interesting developments this season, Brennan, because we're seeing this kind of leap now with him fully healthy, him averaging, and also the refs, I think, are now starting to give him some respect as a good scorer in the league, where he's going to be averaging, I think, the rest of the season around 8 to 10 free throws per game just at this rate.
Yeah, they had a stat in the broadcast, the Suns broadcast today, that Booker is averaging 7.7 free throws made. I think it's over, it was like the past month or maybe since the All-Star break or something like that. And Harden was first with 9, but I think that really put into perspective the growth we've seen from Booker. I think really Harden's going to lead in that category for as long as his peak keeps going here. But to see Booker get into second and get nearly 8, and that's made free throws, just to reiterate that, per game. So that's really a huge number, and even bigger than I guess I've keyed into the free throw shooting, and I know kind of, okay, yeah, he's getting the line more, but just to see it like that, almost 8 made free throws per game is wild. And of course the efficiency is part of it too. 10 of 11 again tonight. He's missed no more than a handful since the All-Star break here, just on a crazy run from the line. Makes you think of those Steve Nash runs where he used to go games, weeks without missing. But Booker converting those opportunities when he gets them is a big part of it too.
Another underrated storyline I'm actually really interested to hear your response to, just Booker's leadership. I think he's starting to really grow into a leader, and I think he's kind of realizing he has to over this last half of the season, and also in his max contract. And he's being a lot more vocal in the court, and he's also being a lot more vocal in the timeout huddles that I watch at the Suns games, at Talk Series Arena, also when I see it on TV as well. It just seems like he's starting to take that leadership role by the reins now at age 22, about to be age 23 next season. And that's a good thing to see.
Yeah, it is. And I think he just feels more comfortable. I feel like that's the one thing, kind of the subconscious subplot, I guess you could call it, of Booker's season. I think observing kind of his growth this year and the frustration, especially, and then being able to overcome that. We've seen really bad emotional outbursts. Obviously, that Gorgie Jang situation is the one that comes to mind. But there was a stretch in the middle of the season where he and the whole team were really letting their emotions get the best of them. And I think it's been from the top down with Booker changing their approach there. And I mean, he's still a guy who I think is in conversation with the refs probably too often, but overall the ability to kind of rally the team and reorganize, refocus in those moments has been big. And obviously it helps when he puts up scoring nights like this. But my second free throw here is going to be Kelly Oubre, and not just Oubre. I mean, he's in that James Harden category tonight. 5 steals, 2 blocks, a pretty efficient night. The 3-point shot was going in, which is always an indicator for him that he's probably going to get a pretty big total in the scoring column. But one thing I want to note with this game, especially early in the first half, was just how valuable it is, especially when the Suns are able to kind of control the pace or maybe just play a team that wants to play quickly as well, like the Rockets do. The value of having Oubre as another guy who can put the ball in his hands, make plays, get out in transition, just be comfortable initiating that pace and keeping the tempo up is super valuable. And I think that really stood out to me today, because we've seen a lot of games where the Suns can play quickly and kind of put opponents in a bind. And obviously the Rockets are very comfortable doing the same. They won this game, but it just stuck out to me that not only can Booker do it, but we're getting to see the fact that Oubre can kind of be another guy to help do that. And the chemistry between those two as well is growing as a result.
What's really interesting to me, just to see, name off his box score real quick, 22 points. He also had 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 5 steals, 2 blocks. It seems like every night now, Oubre is not only producing as a scorer, but also on the defensive end. That's pretty much maintaining now. If he becomes a plus shooter, Brent, I feel like he could be a 20-plus per game scorer and also be a good defender. And that's a really valuable piece on this team. And I also think that every single game now that he's putting up these kind of numbers now, his restricted free agency price, and I feel like that Shams Charania tweet last week kind of foreshadows what could be happening, that I think Kelly Oubre is going to be one of the top names in 2019 free agency, maybe on that second or third tier.
Yeah, it's weird. His shooting has been so streaky, but I think overall just the the value across the box score, the value when it comes to winning, has been impossible to ignore. I mean, he's 31% from three in March, really kind of just hovering around there since the start of the new year. But I think you expect that to go up a little bit when he's not taking so many kind of wild three-pointers. Who knows? Maybe he'll always be a below-average three-point shooter. Maybe that should be something that's considered a little bit more. But a bigger number to me, looking at the March stats for him, obviously the Suns have won some games this month, but plus 2.7, just regular plus-minus there. And that's I think, the biggest number, and kind of shows over this bigger sample size the kind of impact he's been having. But what is your second free throw?
My second free throw is actually Rashawn Holmes. I mean, in 16 minutes, he put up 12 points, 11 rebounds, three of them on the offensive glass, 5 of 9 from the field. Really, when they needed that juice in the second unit, Rashawn Holmes was that cog in the machine, and he's another guy alongside Kelly Oubre at this point. You've got to pay him whatever you have to. I don't think he's going to cost that much, but he's just such a valuable piece in the second unit that he's, I think, some of these nights, like, the Suns aren't in it without a guy like Rashawn Holmes, and I feel like this turnaround wouldn't happen without a guy like Rashawn Holmes. So really impressed tonight by him, and I think it just goes to show just how consistent he's been throughout the entire season. There's an argument. I think he's been one of the top five most consistent players in this roster throughout the year.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that I think he's been getting back to his normal sorts recently. I think coming out of the All-Star break, we weren't seeing that typical performance out of him. At least maybe not a lack of energy, but just not quite the production that we were used to. In the past few games, we've seen it. I think that that dunk over Gobert announced his return pretty loudly, and he kept it up tonight. And I wonder, not to get too much into the free agency thing, we'll talk about his looming payment plenty between now and when it actually comes time to do it, but only 16 minutes tonight. I mean, I don't really think you're going to ever want him to be playing any more than 20. So that does factor in, and a night like this shows it, where, yeah, he's a guy who's going to be able to come in for 15, 20 minutes a night and really, really perform. But it does beg the question of how much value really financially you should be putting into that spot when that guy's backing up your first or second best player. So that's just something to keep an eye on going forward.
Yeah, for sure. I think if I just had to quickly guess, I think it won't be more than $5 million per year. But if a team throws him a big offer, it wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah, I mean, you use the Montrezl Harrell comparison, which makes sense. He's not quite that player, and I don't think he'll get quite that contract. But Harrell's a guy who the Clippers need. They actually need a backup who's that good because their starters aren't very good. You know, they had Marcin Gortat, they cut, and now they have Zubats. It's just, they need Harrell, so they're fine to pay him that much. It'll just be a different kind of equation come July for Holmes.
Yeah, for sure. Two guys that could be really interesting to follow. And I was just doing some quick number crunching here, Brent, before we move on to our second segment. And interesting shooting numbers here for Kelly Oubre. It's obviously, I don't think, sustainable, but catch and shoot threes in March, 25%. Pull up threes, 50%. I just found that really weird. But
yeah, not normal at all. But that's kind of been, I think, the eye test backs that up. He gets hot when he can just, you know, do it in isolation, and I think it kind of gets him in rhythm, which is backwards for most guys.
Yeah, definitely. Before we go on to our second segment here, guys, I want to tell you really quickly about our Locked On NBA Twitter account. If you're not already doing so, go ahead and give us a follow at Locked On NBA Net. I think it's one more valuable resource on NBA Twitter. As you guys know, you guys love our Phoenix Suns coverage here on Locked On Suns, but if you're only really honed in on the Phoenix Suns, you might be missing out on a lot of great coverage elsewhere. We have all 30 teams covered for you, mostly credentialed too, which is great to see the growth of the network. So if you're not already doing so, go ahead and give us a follow at Locked On NBA Net for the best coverage out there.
A reminder as well to keep up to date with everything that Homie is doing. We have been telling you about them for a while, and they continue to save people in the Valley a ton of money when they buy or sell their home. Homie sells your home for just a flat rate of $1,500. That means that on average, you're going to save over $10,000. You think about the fees, the hassle, the needless commissions that go into buying or selling a home. Most of the time, all of that goes away with Homie, and you save a whole ton of money. They also provide you with a team of realtors and attorneys to make that huge decision even simpler and allow you to qualify for a loan to make the process of buying that home easier, and a refund, a buyer refund on the back end of up to $5,000 to help with the closing costs. So as you can see, Homie's there to support you every step of the way and make the process simple and, of course, incredibly cheap. To learn more about my friends at Homie, you're going to text Homie, H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Again, that's Homie, H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. All righty, we will start here with the flagrant fouls and mostly a well-played game, I would say. I mean, I don't even know if I have a flagrant foul. Maybe the Suns coaching staff or the Suns PR for not necessarily letting us know what's going on with D'Anthony Melton. That's where I want to hit on here is just we can talk about Jamal Crawford again. Obviously not his best night, and he's really stringing together bad performances lately. Maybe just 82 games might just be kind of a lot for him at this point to even have an impact in mid-March. But the more important part here is that D'Anthony Melton on a night where Troy Daniels, he was active starting in place of Tyler Johnson and Jamal Crawford are both getting over 15 minutes. That Melton's not playing at all is just really bizarre.
It really is. And I know he's coming back from it looked like when he initially happened, it was a pretty bad ankle sprain and he was walking on a cane. I don't know if he said on the podcast, I think we did last month, but
I would have thought that he would have, that Warren would have been back before him.
I agree. And I think they're kind of at this point, I honestly think that if he's not back by the next homestand, TJ Warren, that is, I feel like he's going to be shut down for the rest of the season. But speaking on D'Anthony Melton, I agree with you. I feel like they're saying he's fully healthy. So on a night where Jamal Crawford, like you mentioned, that was going to be my flagrant foul. So I'm kind of glad we're speaking this. We kind of combined both these parts into one here. He had 0 points in 18 minutes, 0 of 4 from the field, 3-2 assist turnover ratio. On a night where the Rockets play such a switch-heavy team and also on a night where James Harden could be going off, where he went for 41 points, but a guy like D'Anthony Melton, just to use him out there for his length and just to get six fouls or something, just to get harass Harden or something, I feel like he'd be a useful piece on that like this, and especially on other nights in the season. And I feel like he kind of proved himself earlier in the season as well when all these point guard injuries happened. He was thrust into the starting unit that he kind of proved why he should still remain in the rotation. I'm just kind of disappointed at this point that Igor hasn't flipped the switch yet from Crawford to Melton.
Yeah, it's confusing, and I think the identity that this team has when it's at its best of turning defense into offense, you know, playing physically on defense, running things through Booker and Ayton on offense, and having guys who can knock down shots and kind of make smart plays. Melton is pretty perfect there. I mean, I think there's been nights in this season when we've seen him get overextended, but the rest of the roster is pretty much healthy, and so I think in a small role, he could really have an impact. And we were talking about this before we went on the air, but since we're both on the Melton Crawford page here, we can just stick on it. And since he got back, so February 21st, which was the first game back from the All-Star break, he was active but was a DNP CD. Then 13 minutes, 5 minutes, 17 minutes, 15 minutes, another DNP, 7 minutes, 8 minutes, and then the past three games, DNPs as well. So just inconsistent, strange, actually getting less minutes as the days go by, despite the end of the season being quickly coming up here. And it just doesn't make a ton of sense. I don't really see what Crawford is adding at this point when his legs clearly aren't under him. And I don't see what really risk there is of putting Melton out there, even if he is a rookie and is going to make those mistakes that we saw at the beginning of the year when Crawford is really not helping at all. And we obviously know Melton is much more likely to be a part of the future of this team than Crawford will be. So on all counts, very strange. And that's why I default back to maybe the injury is still hampering him more than we realize. And that's just something we aren't privy to, but that was my biggest nitpick tonight. Cause I think mostly everybody kind of played their part, and it was a close game against a really great team. So, yeah.
I think we're in the same agreement here as far as flagrant fouls, like the biggest part of the game. But quickly, I know Josh Jackson had a couple great moments in tonight's game, but I think we should hit on him for just a moment. I feel like just him in that closing unit was kind of hindering them at the end. I think a guy like, obviously, I think Tyler Johnson would have been out there instead of him in that five-man lineup at the end, but I'm just worried at this point about Josh Jackson. I saw Kevin Zimmerman tweet it a couple of times during the game, just like he was taking some really unwarranted shots. He had like some wide open lanes to the rim. He just instead just wanted to do a 10-foot jumper and miss it. And I feel like his, I don't know if he's regressing, but I just feel like at this point, I said on the last podcast that at the last home game against Utah, just his frame is pretty frail. I'm still surprised he's pretty thin now, even though he's been in the league for a year and a half. But now also just the lack of finish here on the rim, I think it's progressively getting worse by the month. Like, I'm just worried about him, and I think this next year, if he's still on the roster, is going to be a big prove year for him.
Yeah, this summer and into the next season is going to be huge, and I really think it might determine the amount of money he's able to make and the longevity he'll be able to have in the league. That's the level we're talking about with him. It's not, you know, what is his extension going to look like? It's, you know, in 3-4 years, is he going to be in the NBA? I think that you really have to worry about at a certain point with a guy who has all the talent there, but has just not been able to consistently put together performances to demonstrate that even really he has a place doing, you know, basic NBA things. And that's frustrating to watch, because we've seen such miraculous stuff from him on occasion, and to not see it consistently, just as a viewer, as somebody who obviously understands how important he is to this team, it's going to be a big question going forward. But again, another thing we will probably, I could see us talking about Josh Jackson during the summer quite a bit, maybe. We will go on here to our stat to watch. But before we do so, I want to remind you guys to check out the Locked On NBA show. We had David Locke on Wednesday night, posted Thursday morning, talking to Ben Golliver about an exclusive interview that Golliver had with Adam Silver and some of the stuff that the commissioner has said lately, in addition to all the stuff that they do to keep you up to date on the last night's games, the playoff races, the awards races, all that stuff, in addition to the bigger picture every day on Locked On NBA. So go subscribe to that show and keep up with all of that. All righty, let's move on here to a stat to watch, and you'll have to humor me for this one. My number is 18. That's the number of points that Daniel House scored. That guy is going to get paid this summer. He's going to be on a good team for his whole career, because he is an NBA player, and this was his first game back, and he reminded everybody how valuable he's going to be to this team down the stretch. How excited were you to watch Daniel House, or am I the only one?
You know, you should just blow it in this moment, Bernie, because I feel like you were the first person that actually saw Daniel House as an NBA player. And I just want you to have this moment, because he's proving himself as an NBA quality player, and he's going to be a free agent this summer. I feel like he might be getting paid some pretty big bucks.
Yeah. I mean, we now have Derek Jones Jr. and Daniel House Jr. who are going to be good players on good teams for a long time, who the Suns let go for Mike James, Shaq Harrison, I don't know, name any of the guys, that Greg Monroe, that's a guy who got to stick around even though Daniel House got cut. So not a great look when you tank and still aren't able to claim these gems. Obviously House has been put in a situation where he's perfectly suited to impact the game with his length, athleticism, and shooting, but it's awesome. I'm happy for him, and the weird situation that made him have to play in the G League for 2 months is gone. He gets to be the Durant stopper in the playoffs for them, and we'll get to really see what he's up for. But I just had to, people have been hearing me do this for like 2 years now, and now here we are. He's playing 35 minutes starting for the second best team in the West. So I gotta do my victory lap. But what is your more legitimate stat to watch for us?
Interesting one, because again, I think it's kind of the same one I did on Wednesday, but it just speaks to why the Suns lost this game. And it's two of them, actually. I'm combining them here. 3-point percentage, which is 7 of 26, combined to be 26.9%. But also the assist turnover ratio, Brennan, 22 assists to 21 turnovers. Those two stats, I think really the big one there is just assist to turnover ratio is why they lost that game.
Yeah, it's I think, a symptom of what we talked about right at the top with Ayton. Despite having an overall impact and having much better energy tonight than he did on Wednesday, kind of getting schooled in a few key situations. And I would add Jamal Crawford to that list, had two of his own. And then Booker, you're kind of counting on 4, 5, 6 of those a night. So it's just a real inconsistency for this team. And they had 13 assists at halftime and only 9 in the second half. And I think that lack of ball movement and poor decision-making with the ball led to the loss in the second half and the Rockets being able to go away. That's just the difference between a good veteran team and a young team, I think. And the Suns, you know, to catch teams off guard, they need to play pretty perfectly, and you can't turn the ball over 20 times and expect to beat good teams.
I'm really curious, though, to see tomorrow's game in New Orleans, because this is back-to-back games, and I know the Utah game was just the fourth quarter, they just kind of rolled over and the Jazz kind of steamrolled them, but this game against one of the top teams in the Western Conference, they won 7 of their last 8 games before this game. Really impressive, and especially without Tyler Johnson, like I said, at the top of the podcast, and if Johnson can go tomorrow in New Orleans, I think I'm pretty confident the Suns might win that game.
Yeah, both teams will be on a back-to-back. The Pelicans lost at home today to the Blazers by 12. No Drew Holiday. We'll see if Anthony Davis plays, even if he does, obviously not playing in fourth quarters. So they have a good shot. I think that if they keep playing like they have against Utah and Houston, the much worse talent in New Orleans will kind of roll over. So hopefully, I think they have the momentum, and we'll get to see what they can do. And after that, they really can start to pile up some of these wins. So to see them compete tonight, I think, was the key.
For sure. Anything else you want to hit on as far as tonight's podcast goes, Burton? Because, again, I think it was one more impressive, even though losses of the year, I think, because, like I said, against one of the best teams in the Western Conference, I mean, this is one of the more respectable losses I can think of as far as the season goes so far.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's one of the types of games you want to see in March for a rebuilding team. So we'll be back Monday, right, to recap the Pelicans game.
Oh, also we'll be live in Talk Series or reenacting the night for the Bulls game too. So
oh yeah, that's a home game. I forgot about that. Yeah, I'm writing about Lauri Markkanen that night, so I'm excited.
Yeah, that's gonna be a fun one. So hey, until then, guys, appreciate you listening in as always, and we'll talk to you then.